John E. M. Rowland, October the 12th, 1942. What can I say for the very gallant rescue of my party, which you achieved in spite, so I'm told, of orders to the contrary? Well, Macrell, I guess it's just thank you, very, very much. Thank you over and over again. If it had not been for you, many of us would not be alive today.
Giles Macrell, July 15th. The camp is littered with hundreds of rotting bags we could do nothing with, and the flies grow worse every day. Early dim-dams, then huge horseflies, all-day leeches, at dusk midges, and just at dark and onwards, sandflies in myriads and some mosquitoes. No wonder this area is uninhabited.
Sir R. E. Knox, Honours Committee, Treasury Chambers, London, November 30th, 1942. Recommendations made to the Governor would, if examined, be found to qualify for a commendation. Percentage risk of death may be put, very roughly, at George Medal, 50 to 80%.
At the beginning of 1942, a party of Gurkhas from the British Army conducted a survey of the Chorkan Pass, one of the few and perhaps the most treacherous of the crossing points on the India-Burma border. They crossed successfully, but their reports observed that in monsoon conditions that would be impossible. 6 months later, at the height of the monsoon and amid the chaos of the British retreat from Burma, a tea planter not only traversed the pass, but brought across approximately 200 refugees. His name was Giles Macrell. His story has largely been forgotten, but for a brief moment during the Second World War he was known, in India and to the British press, as the Elephant Man. Burma was widely regarded as a backwater of the British Empire. It was not a country Britain expected would be attacked by the Japanese, and as a result her army there was not fully equipped and prepared. In the first weeks of 1942, the Japanese launched a devastating assault. On March 7th, the British were forced to evacuate the Burmese capital, Rangoon, destroying its port and oil. By April, they were in full retreat. The collapse prompted a massive evacuation. Tens of thousands of people, British, Indian and Burmese, began a trek hundreds of miles towards India and safety. Most lacked transport and had to journey on foot, travelling through dense jungle using rudimentary maps. Many were wounded, became sick or simply starved. Large numbers died on the way. At the border, those who made it faced new challenges. The division between India and Burma lay across a mountain range with peaks rising in places to 10,000 feet. It could only be crossed at specific points. The monsoon kept the rivers there in full flood, and the footpaths were almost impassable. The RAF quickly began to drop much-needed food supplies. But the government and military were not able to mount an effective rescue because they lacked knowledge of the area and conditions. For many, waiting for a rescue that might not come at all, the situation soon became desperate. It was against that backdrop that tea planters in India, like Giles Macrell, suddenly found themselves in a unique position to save hundreds of lives. Macrell's story has largely been forgotten since the war. Now, thanks to the donation to the University of Cambridge of diaries, papers and, remarkably, first-hand film footage he made during his expedition, it can be told in full. Born in 1889, Macrell was 55 years old by the time war came to Burma. He had served with distinction with the Royal Flying Corps in World War I, but spent much of his life in India and worked in Assam as an area supervisor for Steel Brothers, who exported tea from the region. Macrell knew the jungle. He had contacts with local hill tribes and spoke the language. More importantly, through his work, he had access to the only reliable means of crossing the many rivers of the Assam-Burma border. On June 4th, he received an urgent SOS from refugees trapped on the banks of the Duffer River at the Chorkan Pass. His diary recorded the meeting.
They managed to cross the Duffer by making a human chain, and once that river went up, no one else could have crossed on foot. I promised to collect some elephants and move off as quickly as I could, as they told me the party behind would be starving, especially if they got held up by the rivers.
He was underway by June 6th, navigating rivers and ridges to reach the pass. As well as recording the experience in his diary, he also filmed the expedition, capturing footage of his elephants as they made the trip of about 100 miles to the Duffer River. The conditions were hardly ideal.
June the 8th. By 8 p.m, when it was almost dark, we had not reached a place where we could possibly camp. The whole ground was swarming with leeches, and there was no water for our number of elephants. Gahine, Aparna and I walked behind the Mishmi guide and stopped every 15 minutes to take off leeches, which usually numbered 40 or 50 in that time. I found later that the best way to deal with these was to carry a pair of nail scissors and snip them in half.
Through sheer willpower and in a series of epic forced marches through the jungle, Makrell was at the Daffa by June 9th. Almost immediately, the party spotted smoke emerging from the middle of the river. Not far away, they found an island on which men from the Burma Rifles and Burma Frontier Force had been trapped for about 7 days, but despite his best efforts, Makrell could do nothing to help.
They signalled wildly and made signs to show us they were starving. I made several attempts to get over, but it was utterly impossible. Until dark, we tried over and over again, up and down the river, but failed to get the elephants anywhere near them, and the Kamti mahouts took terrible risks of being washed away and broken to pieces in trying to get over. At last, at dark, we were forced to give up, and I shall never forget the lines of dejected figures crawling and stumbling back to their meagre grass shelters.
Just as all seemed lost, however, the river suddenly calmed down. At 5:30 the next morning, Makrell mounted a new attempt, led by his best elephant, called Rungdot, and this time he was successful. By 7 a.m, the first refugees were over the Daffa, and by midday, all 68 had been carried to safety. 2 hours later, the waters had risen again. In the weeks that followed, Makrell and his team set up camp on the Daffa and helped to cross a steady stream of refugees. They had saved 100 by mid-June, but by mid-July, many of his own party were suffering from fever, including Makrell himself. Reluctantly, he was forced to strike camp, but he was also determined to come back and help others still fleeing the Japanese. One such group was being led by John Rowland, a railroad engineer who left Myitkyina on May 4th. In June, his party reached the Dahing River at a place called Telungkar, but was unable to find a route across. Roland's diaries, which appear in the collection, reveal how dire his situation then became. On June 12th, his team was on half rations and supplementing their diet with fern fronds. 2 weeks later, there was still no sign of help.
June 29th, 1942. Made another check of rations. Can hang on for another week with luck. Cannot reduce the ration issue as everyone now complains of severe giddiness and very great weakness. The situation is getting most desperate. If no rescue party arrives soon, some of the party are bound to die from extreme weakness.
Roland had almost given up hope when, a few days later, his party was spotted by a plane. On July 6th, supplies were finally dropped to his group, giving them a vital lifeline.
At 3 p.m, the aeroplane appeared again and fairly bombarded us with sacks of food. Altogether, we recovered 60 sacks, mainly of rice and atta, with some tea, sugar, salt and iron rations. We now have nearly 2 months' food supplies. There is no doubt that we owe our lives to the marvellous way in which the Royal Air Force has supplied us with the food.
But by the end of July, there was still no sign of a rescue party. Roland and those still fit to travel decided to set off to find a way across the river and get help. They were picked up at the Daffa on July 31st, where rescue operations were continuing in Makrell's absence. Many of Roland's party, however, were still at Telungkar, with apparently far less hope of rescue. In Assam, Makrell had not been idle. Once he was well again, he had made a survey of the Duffer by plane and was now convinced that a second operation should be launched using both elephants and boats. On August 21st, he was back and discovered that further attempts to reach Roland's party at Telung Kar had failed because of insufficient supplies. Logistical pressures now meant that the supply drops were becoming more difficult and time was running out. On September 4th, Makrell's team found and rescued some of the Telung Kar party who had left the camp in search of help. They carried an urgent message from those whom they had left behind, saying that they could only hold out for 8 more days. The message signed off, "Do please do your utmost to deliver us from a situation which is becoming desperate." At almost exactly the same moment, a message arrived from Makrell from Assam.
"I opened the letters brought from Duffer by the elephants. Amongst these were 2 instructing me to stop any further attempt to rescue this party. I decided it was impossible to withdraw in the then existing circumstances, but that I must do all I could to help."
Against instructions, Makrell headed for Telung Kar, but his progress was becoming slow, even on elephants. On September 7th, he sent forward a striking party of his best and fittest men with rations to take to the camp. Then, on the 10th, a team he had dispatched by boat from the Duffer arrived at the Dahing. This enabled Makrell to get closer still, but not close enough. All now rested on the striking party he had sent forward. In the days that followed, Makrell was forced to sit and wait. By September 20th, he had begun to give up hope. But that afternoon, a runner from his striking party arrived back at the camp. They had been successful, and that evening the final party of Chorkan evacuees appeared with the men Makrell had sent out. They were weak, emaciated and worn, but alive. Makrell's story was, for the most part, lost amid the far greater drama that played out in Burma in the years that followed. But he was never forgotten by the 200 people whose lives he saved. For his courageous efforts, rescuing the men of the Burma Rifles, he was ultimately awarded the George Medal. Makrell, who died in 1959, remained modest about what he had achieved, even telling friends that he hoped people would not think he had gone to the Duffer a second time in the hope of claiming another medal.